This hour of Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for America.
The media market personality Marconi goes to Kevin Miller, KIDOAM, Boise, Idaho.
Fighting for Idaho.
I just want to say to all of you, thank you for believing in radio and local radio. I want to thank Town Square Media. I want to thank Kevin Godwin. I want to thank all my listeners.
Fighting for you.
But in reality, this award is about all of you that believe in radio, that believe in touching people's lives. God bless you all. Thank you.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, don't forget it's 720 today. Listen to find out your destination city, brought to you by Tway Travel and 580 KIDO. You could win a pair of tickets to go to the Caribbean, Mexico, a city of your choice throughout the continental United States. Listen, it's 720 for your destination city. Joining us now is Dr. Gerald Lamaro, a best-selling author, a philosopher, an economist, an engineer, author of America's Economic War and Choosing the Good Life. Dr. Lamaro, thank you for joining us.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit concerning the economy here in America. How are we doing, do you think?
Overall, it's the most anemic recovery we've had in 100 years. Not very good. We're limping along, and the unemployment rate may seem low, but there's 93 million Americans who don't have a job, and there's 300 million Americans in the United States. That's quite a big percentage that do not have a job and have given up looking. And there's other factors, too.
Sure. As an economist, does it bother you that unemployment numbers have become political, where you have people saying, well, they're the lowest that they've been, and yet people say that they don't count the, over 6 months, that they don't count, part-time jobs count as full-time now. Are you surprised that it has become political?
Not at all. I mean, when you enter the realm of politics and people are trying to keep their jobs in Washington, a lot of people like those jobs. They're bound to say what they think will sound the best to people, and other people are just straight out honest about it. And I think, in all fairness, the economy isn't doing that well. I think it's pretty bad, and if we keep piling on debt, we might even look at another recession.
And what would that look like? Would that be different than perhaps previous recessions, considering, as you said, the recovery has been anemic?
Absolutely. One of the factors I follow very closely, including in my newest book, is economic freedom. And we're losing economic freedom. You know, the founder of Home Depot was quoted in the Wall Street Journal a while ago and said, "I could not start Home Depot today. The regulations are too high." There are, since 1993, 15,000 new federal regulations to comply with. What's a company to do? You spend your whole life trying to meet the regulations of the federal government.
This growth of government has been unprecedented?
I would say so. In addition to those 15,000 rules since 1993, there's also been new 477,000 public notices, which are related to regulations. There's also over 15,000 executive orders. Can you imagine 15,000 executive orders over the last number of years? That's incredible.
Well, we are here to get some fire and some energy pumped up, but I do have to ask you about a company that you have been familiar with as a member of HP Strategy and Corporate Development Team. Your thoughts on HP splitting up there?
Quite interesting. Most everything I did, I can't talk about, because when you work at that level, you have to comply with the regulations, too, about what you can say publicly. All I can say is I read the public reports. I know the company well. It doesn't surprise me they would consider it. It doesn't surprise me they would do it.
A lot of interesting calls to be in the tablet world, to not be in the tablet world, back in the tablet world. Of course, we have a huge HP facility here in Boise.
Right, absolutely. I have friends in Boise who work for HP.
Now, hopefully they'll keep their jobs.
I hope so. They're good people.
Well, speaking of which, do we go back to NAFTA and GATT as the elimination of manufacturing jobs and your take on that? And how many jobs have we lost that have been manufacturing jobs? Ballpark,
wow.
If you will.
A lot. Actually, you know, look at the problem. Step back one foot, so to speak, and think about what's happened. We started by outsourcing our products. You know, we started letting other companies manufacture them. That was step one. Step two, we're now looking at outsourcing our headquarters. We have all sorts of companies that no longer want to stay in the U.S. because the taxes are too high. Did you know that America's corporate tax rate, including the state taxes, on average are over 39% right here? Recently, the Tax Foundation took a look at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Those are 34 industrialized nations in the world. Do you know where we ranked? You might think we ranked number one or number two out of 34. Guess what? We ranked number 32. We have one of the most unfriendly environments for taxes and investment of any nation in the OECD. That's incredibly bad. We need to change that. What are they doing instead in Washington in the last few weeks? They've been talking about adding more tax disincentives to corporations. Specifically, they want to prevent corporations from moving their headquarters. That's not the right thing to do. They ought to lower the taxes. The companies would be happy to stay.
Now, what about the propaganda that you hear at 580KIDO that, oh, with exemptions and write-offs, that it really isn't as bad as the tax rate states, sir?
The bottom line is the tax rate is too high. We're number 32 out of 34 in the industrialized world. Corporations will want to move out. People don't go to the trouble of moving their headquarters to another country if things are rosy.
That's a good point. Let's go to your book, Renewing America and Its Heritage of Freedom. You talked about something that hasn't been brought up in a few years, economic freedom. We sometimes equate freedom most notably with, you know, the freedom to vote, the freedom to live. But economic freedom, why is that in jeopardy?
Oh, gosh, everywhere you turn, it is. We can look at fiscal policy, where the government is spending too much. We can look at monetary policy with quantitative easing 1, quantitative easing 2, quantitative easing 3. All that is essentially easy money. Easy money helps to create inflation. And the way they compute inflation is if a product goes up, if oranges go up, then they'll say, well, people will have grapefruit instead. And instead of keeping the market basket the same, they actually change the items in the market basket and hide the inflation. Because to me, that's fundamentally dishonest. If you're going to measure apples to tomatoes, that's not the same as apples to apples. Let's use common sense when we do our inflation numbers.
Well, it seems like the big giant bait and switch, but let me hit you with this here at 580KIDO. As an economist, as someone who's a best-selling author, you lecture corporations on what they can do. You talked about quantitative easing and everything. It doesn't make sense to most of us that live paycheck to paycheck and wonder about retirement. How in the world that we could have the Fed printing money and the stock market at all-time highs?
Oh, that actually makes all the sense in the world. The reason is there's no place to put the money. It's all a speculative bubble. And whenever interest rates go up, the market, in my estimation, my guess, is going to be impacted. Where else are you going to put your money if you have money, if you're fortunate to save a few dollars? And there are plenty of grandmothers in the stock market.
So in other words, do you think that's deliberate by the government to force people to go into the stock market?
Well, I don't think they care about the stock market per se. I think what they're looking at is trying to somehow cover the debt they're generating. Remember, our debt to GDP ratio is 108%. One of the best economists, in my opinion, in the country, out at Stanford and Hoover, John Taylor, has said clearly, when you go over 60%, and we're at 108%, you're really on uncharted territory. And you really can expect low growth and a lot of other economic issues. And look at where we are at 108%, and they keep borrowing. It's ridiculous.
Well, how are we ever going to pay that back? I mean, Americans get hit all the time. You got, you know, you were a bad monkey. You didn't pay your credit cards. You didn't pay your house payment, and they go broke. Will that happen to America?
Well, the easy way to turn that around is to change all the current policies in Washington. There's virtually no policy I wouldn't change if I were advising the president. If you've put 93 million Americans back to work, just think of how much tax revenue they would generate, how much GDP they would generate. So you'd raise the GDP, you could start paying off the debt. In a generation, we would be one of the greatest economic powers anyone could ever envision, much greater than we have been in the past if we allow those 93 million Americans to use their talent.
What would be your plan to do that, sir?
Just what I said. I would change the monetary policy to have strong dollar and to be anti-inflationary. I would change the fiscal policies to stay within a budget, balance the budget. And then in terms of regulatory restraint, I would basically ask the Congress to take back the authority to set regulations and essentially shut down the regulations that are there in an ordered way. And there would be ways where we could decide which regulations stay and which go. But when you have a 500,000 regulations, good grief, who can keep up with them? What company has the time? You do those kind of things. You protect private property. You do a number of other things, like you don't go into corporations like Chrysler and tell bondholders your rights aren't there. You do certain things, it's going to make a huge difference. We can turn around America once again. We have existed and have grown largely on the amount of economic freedom we've had in the last 100 years. We need to go back to that and make America great.
Renewing America and its heritage of freedom. Final thought, what do you say to people that are worried about their kids and their grandkids' future?
Well, you're right to worry, but you've got to take action. We have to, excuse me,
okay.
I took a sip of water and went down the wrong way.
It happens to me all the time. No worries. We're used to it.
Okay. They have to take over and start electing people who believe in economic freedom. But stop worrying about other silly factors. Stop reading or listening to ads that condemn people's character. And look at what policies they stand for. Do they stand for economic freedom? Do they believe in political freedom? Do they believe in religious freedom? They all go together. We need freedom. There are 25 essential components of freedom. I cover it in my new book. By the way, the website is renewingamericabook.com for my latest book.
Well, Dr. Lemire, we have to have you back. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Happy to come back. You have a great day, and congratulations on that award.
Well, appreciate it. Take care now.
You bet.
Bye-bye. All right, there we have it. Dr. Lemire there talking about simple economic sense. Again, news, opinion, solutions. That's what we're doing here at 580KIDO. Coming up next, your chance to win the word of the day. The city, your destination city, is next right here. Courtesy of Tway Travel and 580KIDO. Let's get you to work safely.
For the KIDO Tway Travel Great Adventure, here's this hour's city to enter in at 580KIDO.com.
And Kevin Miller with you here. Remember, listen every day at 720 for your first city, which is Baltimore. That's right, Baltimore. Make sure you log that in at 580KIDO.com. Baltimore is your first city, and listen to Dave Ramsey today for your second city, your second chance entry today during the Dave Ramsey Show. Today's city is Baltimore. Do you want to thank Tway Travel? What you're up for are tickets, round trip, your choice of American cities or the Caribbean or even Mexico. Remember, listen every day, enter every day, 720, and then we'll give you the other city as well. Today's city is Baltimore. And, you know, it's funny because we're trying to get a group of experts here, and we've reached out to a few people about the last madman of rock and roll, the Treasure Valley's Paul Revere, who died. And it's funny, you take a listen to these songs, and whether you watched him on YouTube or grew up with Paul Revere, what a amazing individual that maybe a lot of us took for granted that he lived right here. A guy who partnered with the Righteous Brothers, who opened, what, according to the paper, 1,000 times, playing in Vegas on American Bandstand in Branson, Missouri, and other places. You know, here's the skinny. And by the way, if you have a memory of Paul Revere, maybe a favorite song, or you'd like to share with some of the younger folks that don't understand what a musical icon this gentleman was, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And music, in my opinion, was bigger than that back then. You had personalities dressed up in revolutionary garb, whether it was Paul Revere and the Raiders, whether it was the Beatles, whether it was the Monkees. Who can ever forget the Monkees? But regardless, here you have this man that gave so much to Idaho, gave so much to entertainment. And let's face it, as much as people want to talk about Ryan Seacrest or Billy or Carson Daly, I mean, there was only one, Dick Clark, the American Bandstand, and who was on Bandstand. And you had your shows that were imitators like Solid Gold and others, but it was Dick Clark. It was Paul Revere and the Raiders. It was people that made a difference and understood the value of a live performance. Revere and his Raiders appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show and the Tonight Show when it mattered with Johnny Carson. In the mid-60s, the Raiders starred in their own TV show produced by Dick Clark, a close friend of Revere's called Where the Action Is. Two more shows followed, Happening 68 and Happening 69, both produced by Clark. And again, you take a look at this man and your thoughts, your views, maybe your favorite song at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, your thoughts on musical icon Paul Revere. He had an on-screen persona, impressed Paul Schaefer, who, as we know, is the alter ego of David Letterman on The Tonight Show. Schaefer telling the Associated Press, he was my hero. He showed me something as I watched as a kid, that as a piano player, I could have a band, Schaefer said in a text message. Maybe he said this to the Statesman. He was born, actually, as Paul Revere in Harvard, Nebraska, 1936. Moved there as a small boy to Canyon County. Larry Leisure, a friend and business partner with Revere for 40 years, said Revere's name and the Revolutionary War attire were a response to the Beatles and the other British invasion bands taking America by storm. Revere's comedic style flew in the face of the serious rockers, as did his abstinence from the psychedelic scene. Paul was a very different person and performer from what was going on in the late 60s, Leisure said. Drugs were the farthest thing from Paul's life and lifestyle. And then we have more. But again, your reaction to the death of Paul Revere, a guy that, again, went back and forth with the British invasion and everything else, right here in the Treasure Valley passing. He will be missed. We go to...
Don't do it.
Ronnie in Caldwell at 580-KIDO with Kevin Miller. Good morning, Ronnie.
Good morning to you, too. Thanks for starting off the day with a pretty good show. You know, Paul Revere was pretty sweet. This guy had done a lot of things, man, that most people don't know about. But what really got me to call in, though, is that you were reminiscing about things about, like, Dick Clark being the icon. And Dick Clark is the icon of entertainment, man, and most people don't even realize it. But the thing I read one time that Ryan Seacrest had something to do with Dick Clark's stroke. Did you know anything about that?
You've said a lot of irresponsible things before, but that that seems to be taking the case. Here we are honoring Paul Revere, and you're talking about Ryan Seacrest.
Well, beg your pardon, Rose Garden, and you're the one that just brought up, you compared Dick Clark to Ryan Seacrest, which made me think of Ryan Seacrest is why I called in. And the thing is, man, that there's some truth to the rumor that maybe Ryan was in part of a conspiracy to get Dick Clark out of his position so he could take over as the new Dick Clark, if you will. And, you know, another thing about Dick Clark is he did a lot of cool
shows. We're not talking about Dick Clark. We're talking about Paul Revere. Do you have anything else that you'd like to say about Paul Revere?
Paul Revere was really cool, but you were mentioning shows from back then, and Soul Train was the best. Was that a Dick Clark production?
I think that was a Don Cornelius production.
Well, that's the way I lean then, buddy. I'm over and out, but hopefully someone else will
that's
wake you
the
up.
Way, that's the way you lean. What does that mean?
I'm more of a Soul Train kind of dude than a Bandstand kind of guy. Bandstand.
What about Paul Revere?
I don't know. I can't even go there now. You've got me all sidetracked. But anyway,
that's not a difficult thing to do with you.
hopefully you'll do a little research as a host and find out that Ryan Seacrest is really in a conspiracy that put Dick Clark in the hospital.
Anything else?
No, that's it. I'll take myself out. Free!
And again, we're not the views and comments of Ronnie from Caldwell do not reflect the views and comments of this program. 580-5436, and I know it's, again, a little tough to talk about, but the death of Paul Revere, his music, his inspiration, we'd like to hear from you next. Kevin Miller, 580-KIDO.
News. Brian Wiley, weekdays at 6. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And remembering Paul Revere here in the morning, Kevin Miller with you here at 580-KIDO. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Don't forget to listen to your second chance to enter to win the Tway Travel Getaway, courtesy of 580-KIDO, to the Dave Ramsey program today. And a few things that we are going to talk a little bit about education, the top 10 states for teachers. We'll move on from that, but you take a look at the front page of the paper. And education, again, the big issue, state support for higher education falls. Schools want more money, but lawmakers face competing priorities, which often means students cover more of the bill. And then you have a big picture of Dr. Custer here with his hands out. The tuition trap, how Boise State's ambitions are costing students, and it's broken down into five parts. Sundays, Boise State students raise rising tuition and debt. But they have a new campus, new buildings to show for it, and then talks about the research, tuition goes up, and making it affordable. Well, look, this has been going on since kids have been going to school, the ripoff known as higher education. Now, I have a lot of respect for people that have master's degrees and doctorate degrees, and we would never, ever want to start with, what do we call that, economic jealousy. But you get a gig as a professor at Boise State, you're talking that's a six-figure job. Maybe if you've got a master's degree, maybe if you have something else, that's good jack, plus state benefits, plus probably a pension. You're doing quite well. And for me, the question I have with the mounting student debt, student loan debt that we have, and we have these paid places that, you know, you go there and you get a scholarship and everything's great until you have to pay for it, is what's the ROI? What's the return on investment? You know, if you go to be a doctor, you're going to probably be $500,000 in debt. Do you really get $500,000 worth of education? Let's say you want to be an artist, a painter, a philosopher, a political scientist. You know, I know somebody who's gone to school to be a lawyer, a paralegal, now looking to get into politics. Brilliant young person, but sooner or later, you got to go out and make the grade and get the money and start churning. And really, a lot of us have great respect for academic institutions, education. You know, such and such, PhD, such and such, master's, such and such, this and that. But does it really pay off these days? Does it really pay off to you? Manufacturing jobs gone. Service area jobs, great, but you don't really need a doctorate to work in the service industry. You just have to be conscientious of public service, of customer care. And so you take a look at the rising cost of tuition and everything else going up. Is it worth it? Is it worth it to you? And sometimes I see people that, you know, later in your life, they want to get that degree because society has made the assumption that you can't succeed in life without a degree. Bill Gates doesn't have a degree. Did Steve Jobs? Steve Jobs dropped out of high school or dropped out of college. You know, what's going to make it for you in America? Obviously, the work ethic. Look, you don't need a college degree to learn how to code computer stuff, right? You know, did I get my degree? Yeah, I worked my way through it. Something I promised my parents I would do. Do I use my degree? Nope. But, you know, and when I, let's see, when I go out for a job interview, has anybody ever asked me whether I get a job or not? Is it based on getting a degree? Nope. But let's face it, you take a look at these colleges locally, nationally, and everywhere else, and it's you need to get your degree. You don't have any self-worth in life unless you get your degree, because that degree is going to get you your job. Well, what it's going to do is get the guy at Boise State or any of these other places get paid. That's going to CWI. They run a good school, and I like CWI because it's more affordable and you have working people that go there. But, I mean, we've turned public universities into marketing institutions, and you have people that sign their lives away in the hope of a better life, and instead of getting that, they sign the road to indentured servitude. And maybe you disagree. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to the phones. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. Just trying to make sense of the whole cost versus return on higher education.
Yeah, ROI is a really important discussion in concerning higher education, and there's a lot of schools of thought out there. You know, my experience has been in a lot of fields, you don't need a degree. I have had three careers in my life, none of which required a college degree, although I did go for a year after high school, and I had a 14-year career. And then I went for another year, and I had a 10-year career. And I finally finished up, regrettably, at Boise State University, where the BS comes before you, is what many of my students, fellow students have said. And my beef with Boise State in particular, but I'm sure it's a national problem, is the service to the students is not what's in mind. You're right. It is a money-making machine. I've found in my experience as an adult student, and you're a little more conscious of, you know, economic impact when you aren't, you know, comfortable with loans and mom and dad aren't paying for it or whatever your situation may be when you're a younger person. My experience was that, like so many corporations in this country, perhaps most of them, it's about the bottom line. It's not about the consumer. In fact, professors, a lot of the staff don't look at us as consumers. We're students, so we're like a lower species on the food chain.
See, I'm not surprised whether it's Boise State. And by the way, this is the only outlet that's not bought and paid for by the university, so you can speak your mind. But whether it's Boise State or some other place, it's all about the big money. I'd like to see the justification for the tuition. Now you have big buildings that are built, that sort of thing, but the books are the same. Oh, you have to spend $800 to $1,200, $1,500 per semester on a book that you won't use. You sell it back, they'll give it to you for $50. It makes no sense. And then you have, and look, Jennifer, you're a smart cookie. You see these kids that are, you know, doing the student loans, doing the student debts, and at least in our time, there were more jobs out there that degree mattered.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, for certain fields, you know, I was a photographer for a lot of my life. And I see people in the fine arts, music, creative arts, photography, whatever it may be, going and getting, you know, $100,000 in debt for what? You know, this is a field where it's very hard to make a living, and you can learn what you need to learn from classes at Idaho Photography Workshop or even from books, the library, videos online. You know, I learned photography from my boyfriend in New York. Sorry, my dogs are commenting as well.
That's okay. We like the dogs on the show. We're pro-dog.
They have their thoughts. You know, they want to come. I think they're more interested in commenting on squirrels. However, you know, my experience was I got a camera. Someone showed me speed and f-stop, and 3 weeks later I was shooting fashion in Europe. That was lucky. A lot of it was based on connections. But I didn't go into debt and have a huge degree. I knew plenty of photographers in New York who had these giant college degrees and were barely making a living. Student loan payments, forget about it. They were just paying the rent.
Well, and you have people now in their 60s that are paying student loan debts. They might have paid off their mortgage, but you can't get out of that student loan debt.
And you shouldn't get out of things. When you borrow money, you should be culpable for paying for what you've taken. However, you know, back to Boise State, one of my most grievous experiences was finals week this last spring. Went to take a big test. I plan time margins because I'm an adult and I'm in my 40s, and I know that time margins are just as important as money margins in this world. So I had about 20 minutes to spare. You know, students pay for parking passes. We expect to have parking available to us, even if we have to walk, you know, half a mile to get to campus if you get the cheap pass. But I wasn't in a hurry, so I went to Lincoln Garage expecting to park and get to my test. Lincoln Garage was blocked to students during finals week. Why? Because BSU had rented out there was some engagement. It was a big conference, assuming there was money involved. They were in the sub-building, and the Lincoln Garage was reserved for the people who are at the conference. What about students who pay for parking? Well, too bad. We've taken your money for that, but we now have another source, so we're double booking. we're selling the space you paid for to an outside entity. Secondarily, those professors that you think are so highly paid, not all of them are, and they don't get free parking. What other business in the planet doesn't give you free parking when they own the lot? My husband's office gives him free parking because guess what? The building owns the parking spaces. So BSU charges their staff for parking. How petty is that?
I'm with you, but I think a lot of those guys are doing quite well compared to people with comparable skills in the private sector.
Possibly. I know that the football coaches and the president make giant amounts of money, but, you know, the football program does pay for itself.
Well, as
although,
of right now,
you know, some people argue the football players are slave labor because what they get paid as far as an education and the amount of time they put in, they're making about $6 an hour as a football player, so to speak.
Well, they get those nice blue jerseys, though.
There you go. Those are definitely worth working year-round for a college degree they may or may not be able to use.
Jennifer, we appreciate your honesty. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, there we have it, 580-5436. 580-KIDO, but getting back to this, this is at the core of the American dream and the cost of higher education. And we see this. Apparently, we have a proponent of Dr. Custra sending me an email saying Dr. Custra has built 17 new buildings since he was put into that office. Now, I don't know if that's true. And look, Dr. Custra is an achiever. It's not bash Boise State. It's not bash the university. It's, you know, whether you're going to the University of Utah or BYU or any of the local institutions. Obviously, Boise State, very successful locally and nationally, so they're going to take the brunt of it. But when you go to a college, do you get the service? And as a parent, are you frustrated that you're paying for your kid who may or may not get what they, you know, what's the whole thing? Get a job, son. Well, Dad, I've got this enormous debt, and I can't pay for it. Well, you work two or three jobs like I did. More manufacturing jobs were available back then, right? 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Coming up, a record 61.8 million residents in America speak a language other than English at home. Oh, isn't that nice? That's good assimilation. And illegal students bring 21 Spanish dialects to a single school. Whoa. Again, assimilation plus 12. 750 at 580-KIDO. But your thoughts on, you know, and when you went to college, has the experience changed? And you have a lot of people that just do it online. 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. Time for traffic now. Good morning, Dave.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
There we have it, remembering international legend, music legend Paul Revere. Quickly to Doug in CUNA with Kevin Miller at 580-KIDO. Hello, Doug.
Good morning. Hey, I used to live with a guy a few years ago that he was in his 60s. He had a master's degree in social work, and he had gone to school. It took him quite a while to get his degree, and he used any and every federal program from welfare on up to student loans to get his degree. And when he got out of school, he got his job, and he's only making about $60,000 to $65,000 a year. And he's working for the federal government at the moment. And so he has to stay with the federal government now for the next, I think it's 5 or 6 years. And then they will forgive his student loans. But that's the only way he would be able to get out from underneath his student loans. And he'll still be, almost 70, 71 or 72 by the time he gets out from underneath all those student loans. And I've met several people that have master's degrees, and they won't ever be able to pay off their student loans. They'll be in debt for the rest of their lives because, you know, they went to school and they got their master's degree in underwater basket weaving or whatever you want to call it, you know, and they will never pay them off.
Talk about the bad return on investment.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that the federal government or the people giving out the loans will actually issue loans to those people in a field that, you know, the top pay is maybe $40,000 to $50,000 a year, unless you are lucky and get a big break or something like that. It's ridiculous.
Doug, great point. Got to run. Coming up next, we'll hear from Sherry Ibarra. 580 KIDO, 7:59. Coming up next, Sherry Ibarra, and repeating our top story: the U.S. Supreme Court has allowed same-sex marriages in 5 states. We will discuss. Stay with us.
Serving Emmett.